And welcome back to AA Opera Podcast. We are here with episode 92 for you. Whoop whoop.
And 92 for us.
and 92 for us, of course. Really excited about today, but before we kick off, Abby, how are you doing?
Not gonna lie, I'm a bit stressed. This week has been a bit stressful on my end, and I'm feeling it, but it's gonna be okay. It's all gonna work out in the end, and I just feel I'm at that dip of the year when you do a lot of jobs that aren't musical.
Yeah.
And they are more difficult than you want them to be. You kind of lose the plot. And I'm at that point. So I'm And I think it's important to say, I think a lot of people are going to be like, oh my God, that's not positive. Don't say that. But I think it's really important because we all go through it. We all have jobs that we have to do that are not what we want to be doing. And they can stress you out. And I think we don't talk about the fact that when you're doing a job that doesn't feed your passion and it doesn't move you forward, if it's not just a pleasant place to come, check in, check out, it's really difficult to argue your spot about being there. And I'm really trying to rethink how I approach work in that sense.
I'm so glad that you said that. And I can relate to exactly how you're feeling. It's the reality of being a freelancer. And I think, especially at this time of year, you know, it really feels like, I know, it, like from a teaching side of things, it's a new year. So it takes a lot more planning and just getting back into the swing of it. You end up spending a lot more time doing those side jobs that you do. And when in reality, all we want to be doing is singing all of the time. So, but yeah, just one step at a time.
Yeah. And to all of you out there who feel the same way, you're not alone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But what about you? How's your week?
To be honest, I think exactly the same in some ways. I'm finding myself spending a lot of time, like my fingers are in a lot of pies at the moment, and that's great. And I'm, you know, it's good that I have that. But sometimes it can get a little tricky to manage. And I look back on the week that I've just had and I was like, it was just so busy. I didn't know what was coming next each day. However, when I got to the weekend, I did have a friend come to visit and we went to see Newsies the musical.
I'm so jealous. I cannot express enough. I have been wanting to go since I saw it came out. And I was just, I was obsessed with the Newsies in high school. So I was just like, Ashley went to Newsies with Sophie.
I didn't realize that you were into that at all. And for me, I approach Newsies knowing very, very little, like very little. I watched the trailer and had a little look at the plot. But it was a spectacle, I think, is a way to put it.
Have you learned since then that there's also the 1992 original movie version, which on Disney Plus in the UK is called The Newsboys, but it's actually The Newsies. It's the original Newsies.
Okay, so
which is why I was obsessed with it in high school.
I'm now aware of that, and I am desperate to watch it after watching the show, because I'll be honest, it wasn't the best thing that I've seen, and I think I was really, really hyped for it, and there's something in saying that the dancing and the choreography and how all of the scenes changed was outstanding. I think that there were certain elements of the show that didn't quite work within the space. So it wasn't on like West End. It was at the Troubadour Theatre in Wembley. And it was cool. I just think it was an interesting space to do it in, because the stage was in the middle and then you had seats going up the side, but everything was like played out to the front. So I just think the space didn't really do it justice. But I love, love, love the music, and I can't wait to watch that on Disney Plus.
It has Christian Bale in it before he was Batman, and right after, or right before, he was Laurie in Little Women.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God.
Well, yes, I will certainly be watching that and hopefully jumping on your obsession with Newsies.
I made Matt watch it during Christmas break. I was like, having one of my, I need to watch a comfort film days. And he had never seen it. And I was just singing along the whole time. I was like, now's the time to seize the day. Now's the time. And the dancing is also really fun. And it's just, it's just a bottle of joy.
Yeah. So
a lot of cute boys for my teenage self.
Yeah. Well, yeah, to end quite a stressful week, that was a good time. A good time.
I think that's also a great way to come to the end of this segment.
I think so.
And introduce this week's guest.
Absolutely.
So this week we have the incredible Sophie Dix. She's here talking about also some pretty big topics. We got vocal health and motherhood, but we're not going to tell you anymore. Sophie will introduce herself and these topics. So enjoy. Huge warm welcome to Sophie Dix. Sophie, can you please introduce yourself to our audience?
Hi, yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Sophie Dix. I am a mezzo-soprano and I live in Cardiff. I'm a mom and a singer, a singing teacher. And yeah, that's basically my life.
Amazing. We can't wait to hear more. We always kick off the podcast with this question. Can you tell our listeners what your first experience of opera was, be it listening, be it performing, be it singing?
Yeah, sure. I think my first experience of opera will have been singing opera when I was at school. I always wanted to do singing. I loved singing, but I think I was more kind of going down the Christina Aguilera route in my eyes. That was what I wanted to do. And it wasn't until my singing teacher at the time was like, try opera. And I had no clue about it whatsoever. So I had a little listen, I had a little go, and I sang Nessun Dorma at my school prize day. So that was obviously amazing. and then it wasn't until after that I sort of looked into it a little bit more, and I went to see The Tales of Hoffmann at the Opera House when I was about 15. So that was my first kind of, that was the first time I ever saw an opera. And that was when I kind of realized, oh, like you'd be a character, you know, you wear a costume, like it's not just standing and singing like high notes, like that's what I thought it was. So yeah, it wasn't until then that I was like, oh no, this is fun, like I feel like I want to do this kind of thing. So yeah, I didn't really kind of get to know what it was all about for a long time. I think it was a very gradual kind of like love for it, if that makes sense. So yeah.
But that's also a really great first opera to see.
Yeah, no, it was. And it was like, oh my God, I could play the role of a man. That's great. Like, I want to do that. You know, I didn't know that was a thing. So, yeah.
It's great. You started off with a man's aria that no one will ever let you sing again. And then you go on to.
I just love doing the man thing, clearly.
So, before we jump into present day Sophie life, let's go back to 2015 when you decided that a visit to the ENT was a good idea. And discovered what no one wants to find out. What did you find out, and what made you think to visit the ENT in the first place?
Well, I knew about ENTs and I knew about vocal health from, like, we studied it in our first year at Royal Northern. And yeah, something just, I was at the college at the time doing my master's, and just as you guys both know, like at college you have like back-to-back classes, left, right and center. You have to sing in every single one. Like it's full on, isn't it? I feel like you do more singing at college than you actually do when you're doing an opera. Like it's just crazy. And I was noticing like mid-morning my voice was just like getting really tired, and it just wasn't me. I just knew it didn't feel like me. I was like, why is my voice getting tired? But I thought, I'll see how I go. And I did a competition one weekend in Somerset, and it was one of those competitions where you do like a prelim one week and then the semi-finals on the Saturday and the finals on the Sunday. So I did the semi-final and that I was fine. And then it was the final on the Sunday, I woke up and I was like, nah, it's not going to be good. But I powered on. I really, like, looking back, I shouldn't have powered on. But I did, because you're in that moment and you're like, well, I've got, what else do I do? So I sort of did it. And it was after that, I spoke to my dad and he was like, nah, you need to go and see a specialist. And I just wanted answers immediately. So I Googled, like, ear, nose and throat doctors in the area. And I found somebody in Lewisham, which is where I was living at the time. And I literally got an appointment the following day. So when you do go private, it is so quick. Like, it's just like, it's like booking a singing teacher. You can just email them and they can reply like that evening, a sort of thing. You do it that way. So yeah, I went to see him the following day and I had the scope like down my nose. And I'd had a few of them in my life, just because when we was at the Royal Northern, it was kind of a thing in our first year. We kind of got checked out and stuff. But anyway, so I was quite used to that. And yeah, he confirmed that I had, he called it a small swelling on one side, or a polyp. And yeah, it was kind of a weird relief when he told me. Like, I thought, like, for anyone else that might be a scary thing, but for me, I knew that there was something not right. And I'd had many people say, oh no, you're fine, so if you just need to rest, or you've just got a cold. And I knew, nah, this isn't right for me, you know. So when he said that was like, I was like, okay, fine, where do we go from here? And that was when he said, yeah, so the best thing that we can probably do is surgery. So after a bit of a discussion with my family, that's what I decided to do. So the date was booked in for like a couple of months after that. So yeah.
Yeah, wow. And with the surgery, was that amongst your time at music college? Because we saw in the blog that you wrote about it that it would flare up after like during stress, but you still performed a role and you still did your final recital. Like, yeah. What was that like, and where was the surgery happening in relation to all of that?
Yeah, it was so we booked it. So I was doing the Young Artist Programme at Opera Holland Park that summer. So we booked it for after that. And the surgeon said, yeah, I said, can I still sing? Can I still go about my daily normal things? He was like, yeah, just take it easy. And weirdly, I didn't.
Take it easy. Do a summer program, but take it easy.
Sure. But that's it, yeah. And weirdly, I didn't have a flare up once. And on the day of the surgery, he was like, do you still want to have it done? And I was like, well, yeah, it's still there. And I don't want it to flare up again next year and every year and just be a part of my life that I have to deal with. Do you know what I mean? And he sort of seemed to think that this is something that may have been on my vocal cords since my days of singing Ness and Dorma at school. Do you know what I mean? Like, so it might have been there for all these years. And I've just sort of like worked around it. And like, I don't know. Who knows? I'll never know. But so yeah, so my voice felt absolutely fine for me to do my end of year recital, concerts, the YA at Opera Holland Park. It was it was literally fine. So yeah, so I think that was due to the fact that I knew something was knew that there was something there, and I knew that it was going to be sorted. So maybe there was like a weight lifted off my shoulders, if that makes sense. Yeah. So yeah.
100%. And it's also one of those things, it's like, I've already dealt with the problem in a way. Therefore,
yeah,
it's off. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, no, that's it. So no, it was a really weird time. But I'm so glad that it happened when it did, and it's done, and hopefully, touch wood, I don't have to deal with anything like that again. But no, it wasn't fun.
No. And you've mentioned why you went private, because you just wanted to get it over and done with. But with the way the world is, sometimes it can be quite expensive to go private. How did you've mentioned on your blog as well that you had resources to help you out with going private. Can you share how you found out about these resources and how other people can find them if need be?
So on the day of the consultation, when I found out I had the vocal polyp, the ENT said to me how much it was. So when he said that to me, I was like, he said to me it was £300. What I thought he said. I thought he said £300. So I was like, easy, can pay that tomorrow if you want. And then it wasn't until like literally 2 weeks before the surgery, his secretary rang me and said, how are you planning on paying for this, Sophie? Is it through an insurance company? I said, oh no, I'll put it on my card. It'll be fine. My dad's transferred me, or whatever I said. And she went, oh, right, okay. And I said, yeah, can you just like, can I just confirm the amounts? 300. And she sort of like paused. And in that pause, I knew she was going to say something horrific. And it was actually 3,000. So I died. It was awful. I was like, oh my, what am I going to do? I called ISM. I was a member of ISM and I had a bit of a flap down the phone. And she said that there was a members fund that I could apply to. So I looked into it and I applied for it that same day. And I looked into a couple of others. So there was the Royal Society of Musicians as well. And BAPAM, which is the British Association of Performing Arts Medicine. So I contacted all of these people and they sort of like worked together and they clubbed together. And within a few days, they knew that I needed to sort of have an answer pretty quickly. And they got me an answer pretty quickly and they funded the whole thing. And it was amazing. I was so grateful because I wouldn't have been able to do it for £3,000. And BAPAM actually paid for my speech therapy for after the surgery as well. So all of that was just like another weight lifted off my shoulders because that's expensive in itself, the private speech therapy. So yeah, so they all clubbed together and sorted that out for me. But no, I've been with ISM now ever since and they're amazing for various things. So it's definitely well worth like being with somebody if you're not, I would suggest. I think it's about £50 a year to be a member. Yeah. So yeah.
Great. So, I mean, now that you've had the surgery, it would be good to talk about maintaining good vocal health. Can you share what your experience of that has been? Any advice for that?
Yeah, sure. I think everybody's different, to be honest. And everyone knows their own voice like better than anybody else. And I think for me, I really wasn't aware that speaking can have such an impact. I thought, and I think this is why there's such a taboo about it. I think like a lot of people think, oh, well, she must have really bad technique or her teacher must be this or, oh, it's that teacher that did that. And I just wasn't aware that actually it can just be the way you talk. Do you know what I mean? That could have caused it. But for me, maintaining vocal health is I just need to not like for me, I just don't shout ever. Like if I go on a night out, I just make sure I don't shout. And that's something that I didn't really care about when I was younger. I'd just go out and I'd just be shouting. You know what I mean? I didn't ever put two and two together and think that would ever have an effect, like very naively, you know? And as well, like I've always done a lot of teaching and I think for me now, I know how to sort of, like I don't demonstrate really anywhere near as what I, like as much as I used to. If I can feel myself getting tired, like vocally, I'll stop. I'll just have like as much vocal rest as I can. Whereas before, I think I would always power on, do you know what I mean? Which is daft really, and maybe, and saying it now, it's like, why would I ever have done that? But I think I just, when you're younger, you just sort of think, oh no, because I've got to do this competition. I've got to do that. I've got to sing in that class or I've got to do that. And I think actually I could have like, you know, got away with a lot having not like done all of that really. So, but yeah, everybody's different. Some people can't drink dairy or they can't, you know, they can't drink tea and this, that and the other. But for me, I it doesn't really cause me a problem. And alcohol and things like that, like some people like would never touch a drop, whereas I think I just wouldn't sing the day after. That's what I do now. And but yeah, everyone has their own thing. But for me, it was definitely just taking it easy and not going too mad and doing too much, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really interesting what you said about speech having an effect, because I never would have thought that would have been the case.
Yeah. And as well, apparently Manchester accents are more susceptible for it because we're a bit nasal when we talk. I didn't know that. And yeah, so all of these things that I just wasn't aware of. But yeah, it's just, yeah, and like there's just loads of different things, I think. But everybody knows their own voice. And that's what I think is so important, is that you can have teachers, friends, colleagues say to you, you sound fine, but actually, you know, it doesn't feel fine. And I think you've got to trust the fact that you know it better than anybody. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's, I think it's also so interesting that people don't recognize that like there are so many things that are factors into what make your voice and that they just gloss over because it's like, oh, it's their voice. That's how they always sound. But like you said at the beginning, it could have been there for a decade. And therefore, anyone who had met you after it started to develop wouldn't have known ever that there was an issue.
No, absolutely. Because like I said, you know, I've done auditions and I got places at college singing the way I was singing. But it's funny, like looking back on it, my mum would always say to me, you're always losing your voice. And I'd be like, yeah, well, that's just because I'm a singer. I use my voice all the time. Like, it's normal. But now, if I lose my voice now, it's weird. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, my voice can be a bit tired, but I'd be able to do a gig. Or like, I've got a bit of a sore throat. We've all got colds in this house at the moment, but I can still sing. Whereas before, it'd be like, I mean, dead. Like, I couldn't get, I couldn't do that. So yeah,
that's weird. So scary. I would be terrified. Yeah. If I couldn't go brrr, I would genuinely lose my mind. I don't know how you did that.
Yeah. No, it really was awful. And I don't think I wrote much about that in the blog, but even after surgery, it took about a year for me to really be able to sing again properly, like well and healthily, and feel good about it and feel like it sounded okay. That's different for everybody, because weirdly, my best friend at the time also had the exact same problem and the exact same surgery within weeks of me. And she was back on it 6 weeks later, singing absolutely like she's you know what I mean? So that just goes to show how different everyone is.
Yeah, I would have been comparing myself the entire time.
I did. It was really difficult. It was really hard to do that. But, you know, I'm just glad that it came back and it was all fine again, yeah. To be honest, because it wasn't fun.
No, so. that is horrific. But what I really noticed a lot that stood out while reading your blog was the fact that you were still working, and that you were actually working as a singer throughout your time at college, which is something that so many people tell us, wait until the right time. But was it the atmosphere at Northern that made you go out and do it? But I feel like it's also your attitude. Like, it has to be partly your attitude as well. And what was that like then, to do all of that while also in a degree?
Yeah, it was tricky. And I think you're right. I think the Royal Northern particularly were very much like, audition for Glyndebourne, audition for Buxton, audition for these, like, do it. So these companies would come into the college and we would sing for them. And I think my first job was Buxton. And when I was working at Buxton, the rest of the chorus were all, they'd been doing it for years. So I got to know these people and got to know about different companies. Like, I didn't know like Opera Holland Park existed at this point. Like, so all of these different things. So I was like, right, cool. Well, I've had the greatest summer ever. So I'm going to just keep auditioning and writing to people. And I think looking back, I was so confident leaving college. I was literally... I just thought I was great. Like,
I
wish I had that confidence. You really do. Like, yeah, mint. Like, I walked into my OHP audition for the first time. I was like, hey, guys. Like, actually, it was probably a good thing, because that's, you know, they wanted to work with me. But if I did that now as this Sophie, I wouldn't be anywhere near. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So I kind of got to know other singers who had been doing it for a few years. And I do think, like, I mean, I learned a lot at college, but I do think I learned a hell of a lot working in those situations, in choruses, doing small roles. And at the end of the day, like, I do agree, like, don't do anything until you're ready for it. But I wasn't doing anything daft. I was doing chorus, small roles, covers, and roles that I could sing. Do you know what I mean? So it certainly felt like right for me to do that.
Yeah. But I feel like that is a fine example of how being exposed to the real opera world is so helpful and helped sort of round you as a performer, putting yourself in the audition room afterwards. I feel like until you've done that, you don't really, you're in that conservatoire headspace. Because you stepped out, you had just a bit of a broader vision of what.
Yeah, what I think so, definitely. Like. No, I agree. I'm really sorry, but Bowie's just woken up. That's She's just
perfect.
Crying.
Perfect timing, because the next question is all about her. So
yeah.
Shall I? I'll go and grab her. I'm 2 minutes. Yeah. Sorry about that.
All good.
Perfect timing, actually.
Yeah. I'm coming. Yes. Our first baby podcast guest.
This is so exciting.
Hi, Bowie.
Yeah. Hi, Bowie. Yeah. Hello. We're gonna speak in baby talk for the rest of them.
And then just listen to the listenership just go down.
No more swearing on my part. Yeah.
Okay, well. Oh, Sophie, you have a baby. It's evident. Yes, like, she's right here. Your mother to beautiful Bowie. Who is now 1 year old? Can you tell us about her?
Yeah, she's blonde last week.
Tell us
yeah,
about her.
No, she's, as you can see, she is the most gorgeous baby in the world. That's what I think anyway. No, she is the best. The best thing, everyone says, all parents say it, but she is the best thing that's ever happened to us. Like, we're absolutely obsessed with her.
I have to say, she's also the best thing that happened to HMS Pinafore rehearsals at Opera Holland Park. To just get off the stage and there's a baby.
I know. No, she is the best. She's changed our lives, like, massively. Like, this year has been mental. Like, I never, like, it is the hardest thing in the world, but also the best thing at the same time. No, it's just crazy. Like, you don't realize, like, before having a baby, like, all the things that you did. I wish that I had just embraced, like, lying down watching Netflix a little bit more, like, because that's just not a thing I can ever really do now. I know.
Well, that's
it's really upsetting, isn't it, that your mom can't watch Netflix as much as she wants.
Yeah, it's just great. I can't really say much more things about it just because it is so good.
Before deciding to embark on the motherhood journey, did you have a fear of it impacting your career as a singer and, like, having to find the balance between motherhood and nodding your head very, very nervously?
Yeah, definitely. I think everyone does. I think every singer will. And even people in other industries as well. I think it's just one of those things that it's like, when is the right time to do it? And when I was at the Northern, I remember having a conversation with my singing teacher at the time, and I always knew that I wanted to be a mum one day and have kids, and she had kids. So I sort of said to her, like, how do you do it? Like, when do you do it? She said to me, wait until you're established, which is fine advice, but when are you established? Yeah. Like, so for me, I always, in my head, you're established when you sing Hansel at the Met, right? That's always with what I used to go on.
You're a mezzo. You have to sing Hansel at the Met.
Sure. Hansel at the Met, right?
Another boy role for you.
Standard. But then I think the pandemic, no, it was before the pandemic. I'd already said with my partner, Jamie, we always said we really wanted to have a baby by this point or whatever. And I think, you know, being established is such a broad, I think, The singers that I look up to probably don't even feel that they're established yet. Do you know what I mean? I feel like you're always constantly. So I just think at the end of the day, I was working as a singer. I'd got a good relationship with a couple of different companies. I was doing bits and pieces. I was earning money. So for me, it felt like the right time. And I just don't think any time is the right time, but you just make it work. I think that's all I can really say on that. But yeah, I was definitely terrified at the start. And when we found out that we were having a baby, I suddenly thought, why have we done this? Even though it was like months and months and months of like planning and waiting, I was like, we shouldn't have done this. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah,
no, it was a few weeks into the pregnancy, then I was like, this is the best thing ever.
Can we also just add another question in there? And what was it like doing a production when you were 8.5 months pregnant?
That was what I was just about to say. Okay. I was scared about having to tell Opera Holland Park that I was pregnant, which is silly because we know how good they are. But that was what was going through my mind as well when I found out I was pregnant. Like, it was stupid. But yeah, they were obviously amazing. They were great. And physically, it was really difficult because there was so much running around and so much dancing. And I didn't want to be that singer that was like, sorry, I can't do that because I'm pregnant. Do you know what I mean? So I tried to basically do everything I possibly could. But David, the choreographer, he's great. Like, we get on really well. And he I'd give him like a little look every now and then to sort of be like, yeah, I can't really get down on all fours and get back up that quickly. Can we sort of like, do you know what I mean? Just sort of like modify it slightly. So they were great, but I just think it's something, it's like you will know yourself, like when you are on stage performing, you're a different character. Something just, it's like if you're feeling a bit ill, you just get on with it. And I think for me, being pregnant, I just got on with it, ran around the stage doing all these dances, and then I'd run off and I'd be like, oh, like I'd have to sit down. Do you know what I mean? So, but no, it was so much fun. And I think I was 32 weeks pregnant at that time. And I remember saying to myself, if like another singer asks me for advice if they're ever pregnant or whatever, I'd say don't do anything from 32 weeks because that's when you really just want to sit down. So I think it was, oh sweetheart, you okay? Oh, okay, she just fell over.
It's all right.
And the TV has
okay, fine. But yeah, no, it was a lot of fun, but it was hard work, but I'd definitely do it all again. It was great.
Yeah. And how is it now, a year in? Is it going well, balancing motherhood and
When I did HMS Pinafore, I would say like it was great. It was really, really good. I had my mum there, I had Jamie there like to help. Opera Holland Park are obviously so good at, you know, I think by that point, Bowie was like the fifth or sixth baby to like be a part of the season. So people were just like, oh yeah, cool, another baby. Like it was that normal. Like people didn't really care, like, which is great. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, but she came to me for opening night. She was there loads for that. So that was easy. That was really, really good. They made it really easy. But then getting back to audition season. So I've not done audition season for years, because obviously the pandemic was, that was 2 years of no auditions. And then last year she was just born. So this year audition season has been difficult. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. Because the first one I did, I took her with me, which I will never do again, because she was just all over the place. She started eating somebody's croissant at one stage, like, yeah, horrendous. I was like, no, I'm not doing that again. The second one, I was like, right, she can go to nursery for this day, so I'm going on my own. Anyway, I was late, I missed my train, it was horrendous. That was just the worst day ever. So every single one, I'm just learning what not to do next time. So I think by the fifth or sixth audition, it'll be great. Do you know what I mean? Like, it'll be fine. But yeah, it is hard. And financially, obviously, it's hard as well, because you've got, you know, I think actually, Arvi, I think you asked me this during Pinafore. One of you did, like, have you noticed a massive difference, like, financially since having a baby?
Yeah, it wasn't me. It was someone else who asked that. But I remember listening to your answer and I'm being like, oh, that's a good answer.
Yeah, I remember at the time saying no or something. But now she's in nursery now for like 2.5 days a week. And that's an expense that you've never had to pay before in your life. Mm-hmm. Like, whoa, that just hits you. Do you know what I mean? So that is massive, actually, to take into consideration. And things like, if I want to have a singing lesson, I have to find somebody to watch her. Like, I don't have family in the area, do you know what I mean? So I have to pay for somebody to watch her, which is fine. We're happy to do it. We chose to have a baby like here when we've got no family around. But it's things like that do make it difficult to juggle. But you just get on with it and you make things work and you just wing it and you just kind of I just take every single thing as it comes and don't try not to worry too far into the future, basically.
I do feel like on Pinafore, you're kind of like the woman we came to for questions about all sorts of things. It was like, oh, Sophie has a baby. She has all the answers.
No answers at all. I actually do think that you have to just wing it, because nobody, you don't really know. But I remember, like, Swopra were amazing, actually. At the beginning of the year, I had a panic. Like, how am I going to live in London with Bowie, do Opera Holland Park? How am I going to do it? Because I had to have her with me, of course. And Kissy Waitley like rang me and she just gave me so much advice, and they were amazing, actually. And I think you need to have people like that who you can just like say, how am I going to do this? Do you know what I mean? And there always are people like that, because that charity is so good as well. She's getting very involved here.
I'm having the best time here.
Like, this is the best podcast recording ever.
She's like, just scratching the keys. Sure.
End call.
Mom, you've had enough with this. Who are these women? We've obviously mentioned Opera Holland Park quite a bit because, one, we've all worked for them and they are amazing. But have you found, in addition to Opera Holland Park, that the industry is more understanding than what you thought it was to be a mother in this industry?
Yeah, I think so, actually. I think as well, since becoming a mom, I've just been a little bit more like, kind of, she's trying to pull the wire out. I've been a bit more like, look, I can only do this day because I can't get childcare for that day. Whereas before I would have been like, I can do any day and any time you want, like, please hire me. Whereas now I'm like, no, it has to be that day. Otherwise I can't do it. And an audition I did recently, they were amazing. They basically held two slots for me and said, once you know about your daughter's childcare, just let us know, even if it's the day before, which I thought was really nice. Like,
oh, that's amazing.
They didn't have to do that, you know? So no, I mean, I've only worked with Opera Holland Park since having Bowie, but I do think everybody is getting on board. Like, they can't not really, can they now?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So,
it's not the percentage of women and men, and the percentage of people who are having children in the industry has to change the attitude. And also the attitude that men have towards fatherhood is very different than what it was 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that's it. I think there are so many, I know so many singers now with babies. So yeah, the people, like everyone just has to get on board. And interestingly, like some of my mum friends from around Cardiff who aren't singers, who work for different industries and stuff, they were amazed at how that I was taking Bowie with me. Like they were like, I wish I could take my daughter into my work for if I didn't have childcare one afternoon. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not just opera. Like I think everyone needs to just get on board. Like my partner Jamie, he couldn't take Bowie into his work ever. Do you know what I mean? And he should be able to.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, but I do think opera is definitely, it's getting better in that respect for sure.
So you mentioned briefly before about Swapra, Sophie, but have you got any useful resources or advice that you can share for working parents in the industry?
I think kind of just going back off what I said earlier about just being firm and just saying what works for you and not being afraid to say, oh, actually, I can't do that time. Can I do that time? Because it doesn't make you look unreliable or kind of annoying to work with. You're not being annoying. You're just stating facts at the end of the day. And they would surely rather hear you in an audition situation. They would surely rather hear you sing when you're feeling comfortable and not in a rush or thinking about other things, you know? So I think basically just that, to be fair, and just speaking to other singers. There's a Facebook group that we're in, like lots of mums and musicians where people go for advice and stuff like that, and just just speaking to mums all the time and also using each other as mums. Like I had a message the other day off a mum on Facebook saying, next time you're in London, like let me know and I will watch her while you sing. Like there'd be so many people that like would do that, you know. And that's it. And I think everyone would, if you've just got to ask the question. I think don't be afraid to ask the question, really. Because at the end of the day, how long is an audition? It's 10 minutes, like 10 minutes of baby fun, great. And I think with regards to if like getting a role and working with a company is asking questions, about, well, do you know a nanny in the area? Or is there going to be a sketch, like that kind of thing. And just being organized and getting on it like that, I think.
Bowie, do you have any opinions?
No, not yet.
Just in general, do you have any other useful advice to young people in, or just anyone in the industry who's trying to make it all work?
I think for like, if I could like sort of like speak to my younger self, that sounds really like wanky, doesn't it? But anyway.
No, but that's exactly what that question is meant for.
I would say just be realistic. Like, I think we're sold this, when we go to music college, we're sold this dream of like, you're going to make it, you have to go to French song class, because if you don't, you're not going to make it as a singer. And I think for me, I just kind of wish I'd been a bit more realistic and somebody had said to me, look, you're probably not going to be Hansel at the Met, but you're going to have a really nice time, like working as a cover for a company, or you're going to work in an ensemble there, or you might have a small role for that company. And you know what, one day you might have a bigger role there, and but you're going to have a great time. And I think for me, that's why I do it, because I think it's so much fun. I just think like, yes, you can have ambition and you can have this dream and you can work really hard. And I'm not saying I don't work hard to do those things, but also, you know, somebody has to cover and somebody has to work in the chorus and somebody has to do the small roles. I remember I was covering like the tiniest role ever once, and I think that was probably one of my favourite jobs like ever. I don't know, like no pressure, it was great, got paid for it, you know. So I just think, yeah, work hard and like have a dream and an ambition, and work, and you know, you want to do those big things, but also just be realistic and don't expect to just walk into the opera house when you leave, you know. So I think that's,
but I also think it's
me,
really,
yeah,
remembering the having fun part, because you have such a great time when you're doing things like,
when we can speak as well, can't we?
Yeah.
Like, we just had the best summer, and
it's genuinely the best summer. I was just having so much fun.
100%, and it has to be fun, because if it isn't, then I mean, yeah. No one can say about their job, I don't think, oh, I love it, it's the best job in the world. I think there's always got to be parts of a job that are like, ugh. But you've got to, like, I think don't do it unless you really love it, actually, you know? And I do really love it. And I think after doing Pinafore, I was reminded about how much I loved it. And I think that's why I'm back on the audition train now, and sort of I'm working with a new agent and stuff, and you know. So yeah.
We're rooting for you because we just love you so much. So we're just rooting for you.
Well, I love you too. I remember when on the last night party, I was like, "Where is Ashley? I need to meet."
I had the most like one of those convoluted nights where you just keep going. And you're like, I went to get a coat. But somehow it's 2.5 hours later and I still haven't gotten my coat, but I've spoken to every single person.
This has been such a great chat. So thank you.
We've loved having you so much.
Yeah, no, I've loved it as well. It's been really good fun. Thank you so much.
If anybody wants to follow along to see your experience, how can they get in touch with you or follow you online?
So my website is sophiedix.com. My Twitter is at Sophie Mezzo and my Instagram is at Sozdiz. So that's me.
Thank you so much. And yes. Bowie, thank you. Thank Where can people find you, Bowie?
Bowie, just go on my Instagram. He's just taking over. It's ridiculous. I'm sorry for people that used to follow me for something else, but no, it's just Bowie
now. Follow along for more croissant nightmares.
Yeah, croissant, that is literally it. Yeah.
That conversation, we had a lot of potential questions to ask, but this week's question is, have you ever had any questions about your vocal health? I ask you, Ashley.
Yes and yes again. I think vocal health is something that is so personal to the singer, and so I think you can get very much in your head about vocal health, and it's always good to talk about it, but I don't think we talk about it enough, especially in training. Actually, come to think back on it, I don't think I've had in-depth conversation about vocal health. And I think one of my biggest thoughts around it these days is I get quite a lot of requests and singing gigs to do musical theatre, repertoire, which I absolutely love to sing. And I'm getting more into it recently, and I think it's how I apply my technique that I've learned through music college to singing that repertoire, especially when I know I started singing that rep when I was around sort of 13 and upwards, and there's going to be some bad habits there. So I always try and tap into the thought of, am I singing in a healthy way as I sing that repertoire? But actually from doing that, I've noticed that there doesn't have to be a big change between the two things. So I just apply the technique that I've learned as a classical singer to that. And with that, I feel comfort that I am applying good vocal technique, and therefore I can sing that repertoire.
There's a point there, I think, also because there's always the taboo of like, oh, you can't do both. But
yeah.
At the same time, it's the same two chords coming together at the back of your throat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I hear you. And I think also there are certain things that because you learn them so nonchalantly as a young person, you don't think about them. And like, I get very vocally tired when I do Jewish music or like religious services. Because I've sung that stuff since I was 2 years old. And yeah. I don't think about it. And then I'm like in the middle of doing it, I'm like, oh, I was so tired. And
yeah.
For a long time, I had no idea that that was vocal health issues.
Yeah.
And I think like it's just because we have all that stuff in our bag for so long before we actually bring it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually, when I was 13, no, I wasn't. I was 15 and 16, between 15 and 16, I actually lost my voice for 3 months.
Wow.
And I sounded like a boy. It was really confusing.
Was it lower than the Phoebe Buffay, my sticky shoe? Lower than that? Wow. Oh, wow.
It was not only that, it was like cracked. It was like my voice broke. Like, I don't know how to explain it. And I was on steroids for a while, too, because, like, I couldn't produce proper sound.
Wow.
Yeah, I actually don't talk about this quite often, but yeah.
Wow. I've not known this about you, so.
Yeah. I even have, there's a video on my Facebook. I can find it and try and post it on our Instagram if I can find it. But basically, I was in class, or right before class, and the popular song at the time was I'm Too Sexy for My Something.
Okay.
So I would just go, I'm too sexy for my voice. But yeah, I couldn't have a singing lesson for 3 months, which for me was like, oh my God.
So how did that come back for you then?
I don't know what happened. I went to the doctor. I think it was just irritated, or like genuinely my voice just broke in a way that's not normal for women.
There is don't quote me on this, and I'm far from being any sort of doctor, but there is something, I believe, with girls through their teens and when their voices are changing. I actually have a student at the moment who is, she hasn't totally lost her voice, but it just gets very wispy when she's speaking, and it just comes and goes. And she's around 15, 16. And I think there is something surrounding teenage girls and the change in the voice. It's just not as obvious as the boys.
I was in a vocal group at the time with my youth group, which is a very Israeli thing that doesn't really exist anywhere else in the world. But there was another girl who lost her voice too. And she also had that, like, it sounded like she was smoking for decades, and it's like, you're 17, you have not been smoking.
Yeah,
but that was the first place that I learned about the exercises, and she was like, actually it stimulates your vocal cords. And I remember doing that in front of my brother, and I was like, he was like, no, that doesn't do anything. It does. But yeah, I think it happens. I would love to know more about it. All I know is that it happened to me, and I took steroids for a little bit, and I still went to an audition for music school, for like music high school. Israel's very different. I don't know how to explain this. It's kind of like sixth form, but it's not sixth form. We're not going to get into this on this podcast. And I remember I was like, and I think they invited me back. I was like, I'm really sorry, nothing's coming out.
What can you do?
I think I should have learned from that experience and probably gone to see an ENT or something like that. But
yeah,
hindsight is a wonderful thing.
And that is all for this week's episode of AA Opera Podcast. We had so, so, so much fun. And a big, big thank you to Sophie for joining us.
Yes, and thank you very much, Sophie, as well as all of you for tuning in. If you would like to share your answer about vocal health questions you might have, you can check out our Instagram on Monday, where there will be a post all about it. As well as, you can support us by buying us a coffee, which is in our link in our bio on Instagram and in the show notes of this podcast.
Our Instagram handle is AA Opera, so you can find us over there. And if you really, really love this podcast, if you could subscribe to the podcast, that would be amazing, and give us a 5-star rating. And if you really loved it, share it so all your friends get to hear us.
Just a reminder, all of the episodes that are just the two of us will be up for a week before they go onto membership, which means you have to support us financially by spending £1 a month on us.
But we'll see you next week, guys.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.